Day two of 49ers practice at 2024 training camp is in the books. We're going to talk about Brock Purdy. We're going to talk about Jordan Mason. We're going to talk about how good those two players have looked and so many more, including Deebo Samuel. And then we're also going to talk about some of the players who haven't gotten off to the best starts in this training camp. Obviously, pads are not on yet, so we don't want to make any premature sweeping conclusions. I'm going to try to keep this actually away from both lines of scrimmage, since I know that the guys along the offensive line and along the defensive line don't have a fair chance to really show off what they're about until the pads do come on. Those are just much more physical positions. So we could talk about the skill position players. We can talk about the guys in the back seven on the defense. And yes, there have been some technique issues up front that I can discuss here in this version of 49ers Intel. So everybody, welcome in. It is Thursday night. Time is flying. I flew to San Francisco for the start of training camp on Monday night. It's already Thursday, but we're just halfway through this block of 49ers practices to open the season. It was a four practice block on the schedule. It actually surprised me. Thought it'd only be a three practice block. No, it is a four practice block, which is unusual. This is not the way that the 49ers executed the start of training camp last season. So we have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday to cover practice. We're done with Wednesday and Thursday. Friday and Saturday still ahead. Day off on Sunday. And then the second block comes, and that's when we might see Ricky Pearsall. Anyway, when we talk about who's looking good, who's not looking good, how about we start with Brock Purdy? Looking really, really good. I mean, we're talking MVP caliber. And I mean, he looked like an MVP caliber quarterback already last season. But what I think is the difference now is that Brock Purdy is entering training camp with a full offseason healthy under his belt. He actually got to focus on football and not rehab during OTAs. He actually got to work on timing with his receivers during that offseason program. And I think that a lot of the nuances that do benefit in your game when you do get to focus on things like that, I think a lot of those are showing up right away in training camp. You don't have the extremely rusty early practice that we saw from Brock Purdy. I think in practice two last year, I think he went like 12 of 27 or something in practice two, and it was just shaky. I mean, people who knew what they were watching weren't freaking out, but you just said, okay, he's got to really knock off this rust. It is visible. He's coming off of the elbow surgery. It'll be okay. And it was okay. That's what we were saying last year at the time, but it just took a little while to get into the swing of things. This season, I don't see there being that kind of learning process for Brock Purdy. He has come in command. Today, I've already talked about these two throws, and they're on back-to-back plays for the 49ers. There was just that perfect seam shot to Braden Willis, the second-year tight end, and then there was the deep out to Deebo Samuel, who, was... When you throw that ball ahead of the break, think about the Chris Conley throw against the Packers in the divisional round of the playoffs. When you let go of that football ahead of the receiver's break, and then you put it right on the money where the receiver actually is going, right? That's a throw that you can't defend. That's a throw that the cornerback, he's helpless in that situation. If the route is run properly and the throw is delivered with velocity to a spot that the cornerback cannot identify because the break has not yet happened from the receiver, it's pitch and catch. It's a very high degree of difficulty pitch and catch. But Brock Purdy has both the arm strength and the accuracy, and also the intelligence, because he's going to anticipate the depth on that field. He has that field vision. He has all of the attributes necessary to make a throw like that. It's funny because I talk a lot about the greatest show on turf, Rams, when I'm comparing the output of the 2023 49ers offense. And you had to go back to the greatest show on turf, Rams, to find something that was comparable. And I interviewed Kurt Warner about it. Actually ran, that was my first article that was in the print version of the New York Times leading up to the Super Bowl. The Grado Show on Turf Rams had so many similarities to the 49ers because of the types of weapons that they had. Marshall Faulk, for example, was a running back who could also catch passes out of the backfield. He was a true dual threat that stretched and overextended opposing defenses. Obviously, you had some good receivers with Isaac Bruce. You had Ricky Prohl on that team. Oz Hakeem was on that team. Torrey Holt. I mean, really, really good receivers across the board for that Rams team that compromised defenses just by virtue of numbers. And of course you had Orlando Pace playing at that left tackle position. That was the comp to Trent Williams, right? And you had Kurt Warner going from stocking groceries and playing arena football. He's your comp to Brock Purdy, who was pick number 262 and vaulted his way to become an MVP finalist in 2023. But despite all the similarities, there was one big difference, and that was how the Rams approached their passing offense. The 49ers ran from the play-action mold, and they would start short and go deeper with Brock Purdy. He was a great deep passer last season, but it was all predicated on the short and intermediate game, and then it would go deeper. The Rams started deep and came in. They ran that dig route, the 20-yard dig, maybe it was an 18-yard dig, better than anybody had ever run it. In fact, they ran it deeper than most teams had ever run a dig route, and it was all a timing route. Kurt Warner would throw to Isaac Bruce, and the ball would be out of Warner's hands before Isaac Bruce or any one of those really good Rams receivers would break and come back to the football at the sideline. So those dig routes from the Rams were essentially unguardable because the timing was down, the accuracy was down, the arm strength was there for Kurt Warner. He made it work. So that Rams offense achieved the success that they achieved because they were going deep to short. They set everything up short because that dig became such a weapon for them. Brock Purdy, as his career has progressed, has gotten better and better and better with the intermediate pass that borders on the deep pass. So by that, I'm referring to the Chris Conley throw against the Packers in the NFC divisional playoffs. By that, I'm referring to the throw that we saw Brock Purdy make today for the 49ers against their own defense. It was to Deebo Samuel. It was on the deep out. The throw is leaving Purdy's hand before the receiver makes his break, and it's delivered with enough velocity to be completely unguardable if it is accurate. And we know that accuracy is Brock Purdy's strong suit. If you hang a throw like that up for even 0.2 or 0.3 seconds too long, it's where you start to see pick sixes in the NFL, because there is elite athleticism on the other end. Even if a cornerback doesn't know where the receiver is going, if he's afforded a little bit of extra time because there's a duck floating up there in the air, that's why they measure the three cone. That's why they measure the short shuttle. That's why they measure the first 5 yards of these guys' 40-yard dash. That's why the guys that score well typically are the ones that play. They can recover very quickly, and slower velocity by 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour, whatever it is, if it's slower, it lends an opportunity to some of these athletes on the other end to intercept the pass and potentially even take it back all the way. So the fact that Brock Purdy is adding zip to his passes as his career progresses is instrumental, because it's going to open up a whole new part of the route tree for the 49ers, a similar part of the route tree that we saw Matt Ryan deliver to Julio Jones in 2016. That was an extremely efficient Atlanta offense that also worked out of the play action, but was looking a little bit further downfield. And Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, that connection is what made it possible. So I think when you look at this 2024 49ers team and you see the fact that this has turned into a more pass-heavy team with Brock Purdy. In the postseason last year, they called 109 pass plays and only 77 run plays. And they were never hopelessly out of a football game. They actually never let a deficit in that postseason change their play-calling strategy. In fact, when they were down 17 against Detroit, they were actually running more than during the rest of the game. So it was very clearly an offense that started entrusting Brock Purdy to throw the ball more. The weaponry that the 49ers have added around Brock Purdy suggests that they want to continue throwing even more moving into 2024. I mean, they drafted Ricky Pearsall in the first round. They've kept both Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. They still have George Kittle. They still have Kyle Juszczyk. They re-signed Juwan Jennings. Christian McCaffrey comes out of the backfield, catches a lot of passes. I mean, it's almost an embarrassment of riches in the pass game. So with the 49ers so geared toward supporting Brock Purdy and letting Brock Purdy take his career to the next level, look out for this pass offense to continue to stretch the field further and further and further conceptually. And I can't get over that amazing throw to Deebo Samuel today to the sideline, because I think throws like that, which Brock Purdy has shown the capability of making, I think they're going to become more and more part of the 49ers' bread and butter, because he's throwing harder this year. He's further away from the elbow surgery and the elbow injury in 2023. And he's at a point now where this is not going to be ramping up until November like last year was. He's at a point now where there won't be a week two performance like he had against the Rams, where he missed four times on throws of 20 or more yards downfield. I think he's ready to throw some of those deep outs and some of those corners consistently on a rope. And if opponents are already having to worry about all the short stuff and all the intermediate crossers, and they're already having to worry about the occasional bomb deep, well, if you add that, that's really going to create problems for opposing defenses. 49ers were the number one offense in football last season. Brock Purdy was number one in QBR. He led us essentially every quarterback efficiency metric. And based on what I've seen early on in training camp this year, you can expect Brock Purdy to continue excelling into 2024. However, if there's one thing that can slow the 49ers down, we know it's the offensive line. We know that they've stocked up on the skill position weapons. We know that Purdy's a really damn good quarterback. But I thought it was symbolic, and we can treat this as a warning if we're thinking about what could potentially trip the 49ers up in this 2024 season. The offensive line, especially on the interior, if there is not crisp execution there, then pressure can get into Brock Purdy's face really quickly. I know that he can escape. I know that he's got an elite burst. We talk about the 10-yard split, but I'm not sure if a timing-based offense can consistently overcome poor snaps. And I said that I would stay away from the offensive line except from one area of technique. It's a technical aspect that we do need to study. And, you know, Purdy had completed his first two or three passes of training camp on Thursday or on Wednesday. And all of a sudden he was in the shotgun and a low snap came from the 49ers center, Jake Brendel. The only reason I bring it up is because low snaps were an issue throughout the 2023 season. Purdy had to pick the ball up essentially off the ground. It was right above his cleats. And the fact that he had to bend over to retrieve this low snap out of the shotgun completely disrupted the timing of the play. Juwan Jennings was the intended receiver on a shorter out pattern. Brock Purdy did not have enough congruency and rhythm with Juwan Jennings due to the fact that he didn't receive the ball right at his hip and he just threw the ball out of bounds. So something like that, which a fan at home might think is a small error, the low snap from Jake Brendel disrupted a whole play. And the reason I said it was symbolic was because it was Brock Purdy's first incompletion of training camp. Nobody's saying that Brock Purdy was going to complete 100% of his passes in camp, but if that first incompletion was due to a failure on the offensive line's part, on the interior offensive line's part, it's something to pay attention to. Again, the pads aren't on yet, so I'm going to refrain from making sweeping judgments about the offensive line. They also don't have Trent Williams out there yet, and Nick Bosa and even Yetur Gross-Matos were able to get around Jalen Moore, the backup left tackle, at practice today. But the pads need to come on for us to fairly evaluate most of offensive line play. But I think it's very, very fair to evaluate snapping, because you would think that in a more of a contact-free environment like we're seeing right now without the pads, the snapping should actually be cleaner. And one poor snap at this point of training camp, to me, it's too many. The 49ers, the last time that they struggled profusely snapping wise was in 2020. I'm not saying they're struggling profusely now, but I still remember 2020. You had big issues in that season because Western Richburg was out. Remember, he had the whole patellar tendon tear in 2019 against the Saints that ultimately ended his career. So the 49ers would get down to, I think, their fifth string center in the 2020 season. And in training camp, there was already a slate full of omens, right? It was not pretty that were indicating that this would be trouble for San Francisco over the course of the regular season. They started working Daniel Brunskill, who's now with the Tennessee Titans, out at that center position. And I remember one practice inside of Levi's Stadium, that training camp, Kyle Shanahan just kicked the offense off the field because the snapping was so bad. I don't know if it was Brunskill on center during that day, or if it was Ben Garland, or if it was Hronis Grossu was on the team as well. I know it got down to Hronis Grossu in week 8 in Seattle, which was the game that essentially ended the 49ers season because they couldn't pick up an A-gap blitz. But the offense was performing so poorly in that 2020 practice in Levi's Stadium, mainly due to snap issues, that Kyle Shanahan, in all of his frustration, just blew the whistle and told the offense in no uncertain terms, with some poor language, to get the F off the field. And at that moment, I was like, oh boy, this center situation. They paid Weston Richburg a whole lot of money ahead of the 2018 season, but obviously his health wasn't allowing him to play. This center situation is going to be a problem for the 49ers. And it was in 2020. Now, it's since obviously gotten better. They signed Alex Mack in 2021. Alex Mack passed the torch to Jake Brendel in 2022. Jake Brendel had a fantastic season in 2022, but he was worse in 2023. And then he missed the offseason spring program this year with the knee tendonitis. He's back. So there's obviously a little bit of rust that he has to work off. That's why, you know, I listed as questionable here. The 49ers, though, are going to be counting on Jake Brendel to deliver clean snaps, because that is what's going to allow Brock Purdy to consistently continue looking good. The snap aspect of this is very, very important. Take a little hiatus here just to look at the article I put out today. 49ers training camp. Brandon Ayuk and John Lynch watch good DB play together. How's that for a happening at training camp? You know, it's really, really funny. This is the strange world of holdouts and hold-ins in football. But I've never heard of a circumstance in which we see a player who is not practicing due to a contractual negotiation, you could even say a contractual dispute, I've never seen that player in the midst of that dispute or that negotiation literally hanging out with the guy who is ultimately in charge of representing the team in that negotiation. But that's exactly what we saw at 49ers practice today. Yes, that is John Lynch, red shirt at the left, and that is Brandon Ayuk, white shirt at right. So these two guys were watching practice together today, and they're watching it from John Lynch's vantage point. That is the center field vantage point. Lynch stands about 40 yards behind the line of scrimmage, so he could see the game from the similar angle that he watched it as a Hall of Fame safety with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and then the Denver Broncos. During minicamp, a little bit over a month ago, we saw Talanoa Hufanga, Diamantre Lenore, Charvarius Ward, and Jair Brown, four 49ers defensive backs, huddle around John Lynch and watch practice with him from this vantage point at this very spot. Today, we saw Brandon Ayuk join John Lynch. So not only was Ayuk not hiding away somewhere in the weight room while the media was there, he was actually out at practice and he was watching with the guy who he's supposed to be in some kind of contentious negotiation with right now. Now, there are a couple things. A, Ayuk is probably not handling his own contract. He's got an agent, Ryan Williams, who's doing that. And John Lynch is probably not sitting in on the nitty-gritty of all these meetings because the 49ers have their own people led by Parag Marathe to do that. So there's one degree of separation that I think probably helps enable a friendly conversation like this, and it looked to be a totally amicable conversation, but it still was quite the visual. And it's been so interesting to me throughout the course of this entire offseason that Brandon Ayuk has not really played hardball in negotiations. There have been a couple blips. Of course, he didn't show up for minicamp, and then he formally requested the trade about a week before training camp. But other than that, he's come on podcasts and he's put out social media posts saying in no uncertain terms that he wants to play for the 49ers this next season. He's shown on Instagram Live that he's driving into the team facility to work out. He's let it be known that he's been working out at the team facility every single day. On some of the podcasts that Brandon Ayuk has appeared on, he's even, you know, made the prediction that he's going to be with the 49ers for the future. I mean, when you're talking about somebody wanting to negotiate and trying to establish as much leverage as possible, the opposite types of behavior of those ones that I just listed would often be the types of behavior that you would see from that player. You would hear radio silence. You wouldn't see him show up at the team facility as Brandon Ayuk has for this hold-in. Nick Bosa is a great example. Last year, he had leverage, and then he made sure to maintain and maybe even build as much as possible by just staying silent throughout the offseason and then not showing up until he got the contract. Brandon Ayuk is actually much more involved and much more around than you typically see in a contract situation like this. Despite the stirring of the pot and some of the drama that we've heard from him in the offseason, he's still actually at the facility. I don't know if it helps him from a negotiation standpoint. I can't see how it would, but maybe it's just a tacit acknowledgement from Brandon Ayuk that no, he doesn't have much leverage here, and he's hoping that but through acting in a, you know, fashion of goodwill, by actually showing up to practice, by actually talking to John Lynch, he hopes that, you know, a deal can get done that's at least acceptable to him. It's going to be really, really hard, if not impossible, for Brandon Ayuk to shake down the 49ers. The only way that I could see something like this reaching that level of 49ers desperation is if Brandon Ayuk continues to not practice and not suit up into the regular season without a deal, and the 49ers offense struggles without him. But I talked so much a few minutes ago about how loaded this offense is, how good Brock Purdy looks. I don't think that this offense is going to fall off a cliff if Brandon Ayuk is not there. So his shot of establishing serious leverage of the over the 49ers is not only just potentially months away. You'd have to wait a long time for the 49ers to miss him. It's also unlikely to come to fruition. And for that reason, with the 49ers in a take it or leave it situation with Brandon Ayuk, the offer's out there and they're saying, you know, we're not going to budge much further because they have the leverage. For that reason, I think that Brandon Ayuk is going to come to the table sooner rather than later. At least that's what the business incentives for him in this situation dictate. Anyway, this is up right now, and it's actually listed in the description, so go ahead and check it out. I wrote about Brandon Ayuk and John Lynch watching good DB play together. As soon as Brandon Ayuk was done talking with John Lynch, he walked back toward the fence where there's a little sliver of shade, and that's where Talanoa Hufanga was camping out. So Brandon Ayuk watched the rest of practice with Talanoa Hufanga. That means that he watched the entirety of the practice with a safety. Hufanga was an All-Pro in 2022. John Lynch, obviously a Hall of Famer. And when we talk about a player that's looked really good, Malik Mustafa, the safety, has looked really, really good. He almost had another interception today. I wrote about that in this piece. Safety's looking good. You see Mustafa there in the middle. Samuel Womack is a defensive back on the left. Mustafa is 43. I believe that looks like Diamara Lenore. It looks like number two on the right. And then that's a receiver behind them. But you could see how big Malik Mustafa is, how wide he is compared to these defensive backs. Especially these days, safeties are longer, rangier players. So to see a safety that's built like a tank, like Malik Mustafa, is surprising. It makes you excited about his ability to tackle, about his ability to play near the box, maybe even his ability to blitz. He's not going to have a chance to tackle until the first preseason game on August 10th. But you also think, okay, well, is he going to be rangy enough? Like some of the longer slimmer guys that play the safety position? Is he going to be rangy enough to cover ground, especially in zone, when you're going to need to cover a lot of ground on these deep passes? And over the course of the first two practices, Malik Mustafa has started quelling so many of those doubts. He intercepted the pass intended for Danny Gray on day one, sprinting over the top. That was awesome. I can't wait to talk to Kyle Shanahan again. I think we're going to have to wait probably till Saturday to discuss that with Kyle Shanahan again, because Shanahan was wondering before he saw the film when I last talked to him that he was wondering if Josh Dobbs, the quarterback on the pick, if he looked off Malik Mustafa. Because Shanahan said that if he looked off Malik Mustafa, and this was 7-on-7 action, and Mustafa was still able to cover that kind of ground, Shanahan's jaw was ready to hit the floor. His jaw was dropping. Because he said it was an impressive play, even if Dobbs had not looked off Mustafa. That's how much ground Malik Mustafa was able to cover on the play. So he's looking very good. He's answering some of the, or one of the primary doubts that people rightfully had about him, because you look at the body type and you wonder, is he going to be that type of rangy safety that you need him to be? And it's not always about speed to be that rangy. It's also about anticipation. Dwayne Akina used to be the DB coach at Stanford, and he taught me so much about safety play because he coached Earl Thomas at Texas. And Dwayne Akina would always talk about the two traits that you need to have to be a good middle third safety. One is obviously the speed and the acceleration. So, you know, you could have a guy that runs a 4.2 or a 4.3 and on one end of the spectrum, and then you could have a guy that runs a 4.6 or 4.7 at the other end of the spectrum. That's one of the traits, right? The second trait is anticipation and recognition. So you can have a guy that runs a 4.3 at safety, but if he has the recognition of a high schooler, if he just can't tell what's coming, he's not going to get a good first or second step toward where he needs to run. He's going to be in the middle of the field. He's trying to run toward the sideline to cut off a deep pass. If he doesn't recognize that play, well, even a guy that's much slower than him, the 4.6 guy with good recognition, is already going to be 3 or 4 yards ahead, at least, of where the 4.3 guy would be if he gets a quicker break on the football. So if you've got a 4.6 guy with really, really good anticipation and recognition, that's an NFL player. If you have a 4.6 guy with bad anticipation and recognition, that's a guy whose career ends after college. He can't, I mean, you have to have one or the other at least, right? So 4.6 with recognition, that's a NFL player with a limited ceiling, but he can make it in the NFL. If you have a 4.3 guy with poor recognition, again, that's a player who probably is going to make it in the NFL at a backup level. He'll definitely get a chance because he runs a 4.3, but the ceiling, again, is limited. Dwayne Akina, that former Stanford and Texas DB coach, told me that if you have a 4.3 guy who also has great anticipation, that's when you can start talking about Earl Thomas and sipping margaritas on a yacht. If you have that combination of 4.3 speed and excellent recognition and anticipation, and you can merge those two together, so few players have that. But if you do have that, you've got an all-pro that's going to have enough money to buy a yacht. That's the way that Dwayne Akina put it several years ago when we talked about the safety position. So anyway, I'm not saying that Malik Mustafa is Earl Thomas, but I'm saying that Malik Mustafa definitely has good recognition. He doesn't have 4.3 speed. We'll see what kind of speed he can play with at the NFL level. But it appears, at least on first glance, that he's got the recognition to not be a liability and instead be an asset on the back end in the post safety position when he's covering ground. Once the pads come on and once tackling is live, that's going to obviously happen once the preseason starts, we'll see more from Malik Mustafa as far as his physicality near the line of scrimmage. And I think that's actually the more known commodity coming from Malik Mustafa. We know that he can play near that line of scrimmage. But if he can answer the questions in the open field now, and then he can merge those two aspects of his game together, arrow up for the 49ers rookie safety out of Wake Forest. Let's move on Let's go to another questionable one here at 49ers training camp. We haven't heard much from Cam Latu yet. And in one sense, that's probably a good thing because we heard a lot from him last offseason, last training camp, and it wasn't good. He just dropped so many passes. It was like five or six drops. He got frustrated after one, and he punted the pylon. He wasn't, not happy. And you wouldn't be happy. You'd get frustrated in that situation if the drops became such an issue. So there's been a lot of talk about a mental reset for Cam Latu. That's what he's needed to do. But not only does that mental reset necessary, he's also got to go out and seize a job. Because if you look at the 49ers depth chart, they have decided to completely restock the tight end room over the course of this offseason. And also remember the moves they couldn't make but tried to make. They tried to sign Brock Wright, the restricted free agent of the Detroit Lions. They obviously were looking to upgrade the position opposite George Kittle. Wright obviously re-signed with Detroit because they matched the 49ers' offer in restricted free agency. So the 49ers instead signed Eric Saubert. I will say that Eric Saubert's looking good. He's just got one of the nicest catches so far of training camp. I think that he is the favorite to be the 49ers tight end too. But I just haven't heard yet from Cam Latu. I haven't heard in a good way. I haven't heard in a bad way. So the good news is that he's not dropping passes anymore. The bad news is he's not being targeted. And when you've got Saubert on the team, when you've signed Logan Thomas to add more competition at the tight end position, when Braden Willis made a nice play today on a beautiful throw from Brock Purdy on the post route, when Mason Plyne is an undrafted free agent with a lot of promise and a lot of upside because he's so raw, most recently a basketball player before he switched over to football in college. When you've got all of these names, these fresh names in the tight end room looking to make a move, I think that it's absolutely imperative for Cam Latu to assert himself. And if he doesn't assert himself, well, you say, yeah, he was a third round pick. Of course, the 49ers are going to give him another chance. They're not in a position to give unlimited chances to third round picks anymore. Last year, they cut Trey Sermon. Was this in 2022? Actually, that might have been in 2022. I think I'm getting my years mixed up. But they didn't give Trey Sermon more leeway than anybody else, right? And he was a third-round pick at the running back position. So draft stop position right now does not matter to the 49ers. These guys are in a firm and focused direction to win a Super Bowl now. They didn't even care about draft position with Trey Lance, and you shouldn't. That's called sunk cost fallacy. You don't care where you drafted somebody if you have a better option, and it's going to hurt you now to keep that player on the roster versus having that roster spot for somebody else. You forget where you picked him and you move on. You don't worry about, you know, what the cost was 2 years ago. You worry about what the cost to you would be to keep the player right now. Give the 49ers credit. They moved off of Trey Lance when they should have moved off of Trey Lance. They moved off of Trey Sermon when they should have moved off of Trey Sermon. They moved off of Ty Davis Price when they should have moved off to Ty Davis Price. If Cam Latu doesn't show enough this training camp, they're going to move off of Cam Latu when they should move off of Cam Latu. So I put him in the questionable category right now because we're in a spot where he absolutely needs to make a splash this training camp, and it hasn't yet started over the first 2 days of the event. Another player who's looking really, really good is Deebo Samuel. Deebo's actually on our little podcast promotion, just a picture that Mike put up. Let's get that out right here, because it's a good way to see the kind of shape that Deebo Samuel is in. Who's ready for this? The Lombardi Lounge. By the way, those of you who haven't subscribed yet, given it a 5-star review, please do so right now. It's available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but that's Deebo. In 2021, when he came in great shape and then just took the league by storm and dominated at both receiver and running back, they were calling Deebo Samuel Skinny Deebo during training camp. I think they can call Deebo Skinny Deebo again. And, you know, mind you, skinny for Deebo Samuel still is a tank-like build for the normal person. So we're not saying that he's slim. We're not saying that he's somebody who's svelte, which means slender and elegant. We're talking about a guy who's just ripped out of his mind right now and is ready to continue delivering the brick wall treatment to would-be tacklers, but he's also ready to do it at a super high speed. This might be the best shape that Deebo Samuel has ever been in. Anyway, Lombardi Lounge. This is episode 10, I believe, of the Lombardi Lounge as we speak right now. But you could see Deebo Samuel on the cover right there. Make sure that you're subscribed to Lombardi Lounge on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Even if you're a YouTube loyalist, make sure that you are a member of the audio-only version of the podcast. Mike just shared some Deebo Samuel content with us. So why don't we go ahead and check it out? He got this from the 49ers. So I think that this could be good. We just have to save it onto the computer. And as soon as we do, we could share it up on the screen. Those of you who are listening, by the way, this is why you occasionally should watch on YouTube, because you can see highlights like this. Looks like Brandon Allen to Deebo Samuel. Oh, yeah, this was a great play. I really enjoyed watching this. We're going to replay this. This is Deebo and some muscle. This is against Rock Ya-Sin, who's one of the 49ers veteran cornerbacks. Let's pause it right there. This is good coverage. I mean, this is a textbook from Rock Ya-Sin. Played for the Ravens last year. He's been around the league. His arm is right there in position to disrupt that pass. If the receiver is any physically weaker, that's going to be a pass breakup for Rock Ya-Sin. And if he knocks the ball into the air, it could be an interception. But Deebo Samuel seems to be on a physical mission this year. And he just wrestled that ball away from Rock Ya-Sin. Look at the frustration. Rock Ya-Sin can't believe that he could not knock that ball away from Deebo Samuel. Just throws his arms up right here in frustration. Oh, God. That's the kind of stuff that Deebo Samuel can do in close quarters with his strength. It's been really, really impressive to see him here over the first couple days of training camp. We saw the treadmill videos over the course of the offseason. We saw some of the strength stuff he was doing. You know, you talk about motivation. So much of the media is saying, oh, they're going to have to jettison Deebo Samuel before his contract is even up if they pay Brandon Ayuk. A, that stuff isn't true. This is coming from people just speculating about the salary cap. And B, that stuff is going to fire Deebo Samuel up. I mean, anybody who was an all-pro caliber player just a couple years ago, right? The 2021 season from Deebo Samuel was awesome. He's dealt with some health issues, hasn't been available for the whole season in 2022 and 2023, but he's still been very productive when he's been healthy. But a player who was playing like a man possessed in that 2021 season, who was a star at running back, who was a star at receiver, if he's got a little bit of a challenge to respond to, especially with the style that you've seen from Deebo Samuel, I think that he's in a position to where he can prove a lot of people wrong. And you can mark my words right now. You could bookmark this. You could videotape it. You could do whatever you want. If Deebo Samuel plays the whole season and delivers a good year, regardless of what the 49ers do with Brandon Ayuk, they will work to keep Deebo Samuel for 2025 and possibly even beyond. That's how big of an impact maker Deebo Samuel is for this 49ers offense. It is not a player that you just jettison before the end of his contract, and he's got 2 years left. Going to go to another questionable player so far. This is part of the quarterback two battle. This is Josh Dobbs. During OTAs, I raised some concern about some of the intermediate throws from Dobbs, airmailing, sailing a little bit too high. There was another one of those today. He threw the interception today. That was Darrell Luter Jr., who, by the way, has been looking good. We're going to listen to Nick Sorensen on Darrell Luter Jr. in just a second. But Dobbs has got to be more consistently accurate on those intermediates. I don't mind the deep shots as much. Darrell Luter made a great play. That's all fine. But the intermediates are the bread and butter of this 49ers offense. You know, Sam Darnold is tearing it up over the first 2 days at Minnesota's camp. So that's a point for the 49ers quarterback rehabilitation program. But it just makes you appreciate how good San Francisco had it at the QB position last season. I mean, Sam Darnold was probably the best backup in the league. He was really good. That first half that he played against the Rams in week 18 was solid as well. It beat out Trey Lance during training camp. But Sam Darnold impressed for the 49ers last season, and they had quite the robust 1-2 punch at the quarterback position. Any team with Super Bowl aspirations is going to need to feel good about its QB2 to be able to bridge the gap in case QB1 is ever unavailable for any period of time. And there were some periods of time last year where Brock Purdy was indeed unavailable. Based on what we've seen so far in training camp around the league, with what Darnold is doing in Minnesota, and with, you know, some of the shakier play that we've seen from both Josh Dobbs and Brandon Allen to begin this training camp for the 49ers, I think it's safe to say that San Francisco is not in as good of a position at the backup quarterback spot as they were last year. And Dobbs, you know, that airmailed throw today is what made me put this on as one of the points to talk about in this show. Anyway, the interception went to Darrell Luter Jr., second-year DB. Let's listen to Nick Sorensen, 49ers defensive coordinator, on what he had to say about Darrell Luter Jr.
Big, because with him it was the injury, you know, and then he missed a lot of time and it was like catching up. And so here it's just the progress. He's got great size, length, and the pick he had today was awesome. He just went up and grabbed it. He snatched it, he high pointed it, took it. And the progress with him is using the size and length that he's got, and he's been doing that. He's got the feet for it. He's built right. He's strong. He's willing. He's a willing tackler. He'll go hit. And again, just progress with him, and you're seeing it.
Progress from Darrell Luter Jr. Now, this is fascinating stuff, because now we can look into more long-term team building for the 49ers. So we could toss this up onto the screen. You could see that Darrell Luter Jr., I have him at the very back of the 53-man roster in that cornerback room. I'll highlight the cornerback room or the entire secondary for you. It's a dogfight just to make the 53-man roster right now. Somebody like Ambry Thomas, somebody like Samuel Womack, who actually made a nice pass breakup today, physical pass breakup that fired everybody up against Danny Gray. Those guys are on the outside looking in, I think. Somebody's going to have to get hurt in front of those guys for them to make this 53-man roster. Now, the practice squad is a useful vehicle for keeping players in the building, and obviously it's unfortunate, but injuries are likely to happen between now and cut down day. So it's impossible to make firm predictions as to what's going to happen right now. But this just illustrates how crowded it is in that 49ers cornerback room. That being said, look at the contractual situations of all these players. Charvarius Ward, 1-year deal. Isaac Yiadom, 1-year deal. Deamara Lenore, 1-year deal. By 1-year deal, I mean there's only 1 year left on Lenore's deal, only 1 year left on Ward's deal. Rock Ya-Sin, 1-year deal. The top four cornerbacks on this 49ers roster, the veterans, all those guys are only under contract through 2024. So they drafted Renardo Green in the second round of this past draft. He's a rookie out of Florida State. And Darrell Luter Jr., he was a fifth-round pick in the season prior, 2023. The 49ers, I think it's very clear, are not going to be able to re-sign all of these cornerbacks, especially if Yiadom has a good year. Rock Ya-Sin is a veteran. Charvarius Ward is going to command big money. Lenore is likely going to command a sizable contract. It's not going to stay this way in front of Renardo Green and Darrell Luter Jr. forever. It's not going to stay this way for more than a year. So they might be loaded now, but these are all one-year deals. And younger guys are going to have to step up at that cornerback position, perhaps as soon as this year if guys get hurt, but for sure by the 2025 season. So that's why training camp is such a big deal right now for Renardo Green. That's why somebody like Darrell Luter Jr. has a golden opportunity in front of him. The reward of hard work and great contributions in training camp may not come immediately for somebody like Darrell Luter Jr., but if he can just establish himself on the back end of that 53-man roster this year, he will be in prime position to try to grab a starting spot once a lot of these guys see their contract expire in 2025. And that is how you keep a team good for the long haul. You have to have young, drafted talent ready to rise up the ranks and fill in for B-list veterans, because Charvarius Ward may be an A-lister, but, you know, Isaac Yiadom, probably not an A-lister. See if Diomedo Lenore keeps on making strides, but he's not an A-lister yet. You've got to be ready to replace B-listers when other teams swoop in and offer them more money than you're comfortable paying. The 49ers will pay their A-listers, as we continue to see. They're working on paying Brandon Ayuk now, and they've paid more A-listers than any other team in the NFL. They'll pay their A-listers, but the B-listers are the guys that must be replaced by drafted talent on a rookie contract. And Darrell Luter Jr. fits that mold perfectly. So when we talk about team building, we think about it in short term, and we think about it on a long-term track. And Darrell Luter Jr., I think, really fits that long-term track for the 49ers, with the potential to contribute in the short term as well. Another player who's been looking good, Elijah Mitchell. And I'm going to include Jordan Mason with this. We're going to hear from Christian McCaffrey on Jordan Mason in a second. I know there's, in the fan world, there seems to be some kind of rivalry between Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason. Mitchell, I think, is clear that the 49ers' number two back behind McCaffrey when he's healthy. That's obviously been an issue many times over the course of the past 3 years. But to me, Mitchell is looking like he's in great shape. Looks like he's been healthy over the course of the offseason, so he's been able to focus on his conditioning. And because he's an all-around back, he looks great whenever he touches the ball in the 49ers system. He can pass protect. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. A player that has evolved and emerged into more of a three-down threat over the course of this training camp, and the work probably happened over the course of the offseason, is Jordan Mason. He's caught several passes over the first 2 days, and he's shown softer hands than I've seen from him over the course of his first couple years in the league. Got to the point where Jordan Mason, I just can't wait here. Let's put it this way. I can't wait to see pads come on to see how well he's pass protecting, because I think that's been the one thing that everybody's, you know, holding their breath about regarding Jordan Mason. But it's gotten to the point where Christian McCaffrey, who called Jordan Mason Mariano Rivera a couple years ago because Mason was the closer for the 49ers, all icing all the games with those runs in the fourth quarter. Christian McCaffrey today said, I think he could pitch in every inning. That's a big compliment coming from the top back in the league himself. Let's listen more to Christian McCaffrey about Jordan Mason, because I think that running back room, starting with Mitchell, moving to Mason behind McCaffrey, is looking really good for the 49ers.
Absolutely. He's improved so much in the first time I've met him. Just the way he is in the meetings, the way he is out at practice. I think our whole running back room has such a good energy to it right now. You know, we're all pushing each other, making each other better, but also being there for each other. And it's a really fun room to be a part of because, you know, you want to talk about guys forcing you to be at your best. Every single one of those guys right now are doing just that. And makes it fun to be a part of. Yeah, man, I think he looks way more complete than he has been. He's always been able to do it. It's just being consistent with it. And I think you see now he's making things happen in the pass game and the run game that are just consistent with it. So yeah, I think he can pitch every inning now.
There you go. He can pitch every inning now. It's no longer Mariano Rivera. It's more of a starter. He's Madison Bumgarner in his prime, Jordan Mason. That's going to make the people who like Jordan Mason really excited. But I don't forget about Elijah Mitchell, because when Elijah's healthy, he's the 49ers' clear number two. And listen, you're going to need more than one backup at that position. That's a notoriously physical position. And if you're talking about easing Christian McCaffrey's workload, the more the merrier when it comes to capable talent behind Christian McCaffrey. So that's a full run through of who's looking good, who's not looking as good for the 49ers here during training camp. I'm happy to answer a lot more questions. D. Winters, also the hype on D. Winters from his teammates and from Kyle Shanahan has been notable, but he's not taking reps with the first team yet. Devondre Campbell, the veteran who they signed, is the guy that's replacing Dre Greenlaw as of right now. But it's still early in camp. Pads haven't come on. I'm going to be paying close attention to D. Winters and his progression for the 49ers over the course of the next few weeks. So we're going to open this up to a nice 49ers Q&A. And we're going to play some practice footage from today as well. But let me wade into the comments section. Let's get a couple good questions up on the screen. I'm going to find my practice footage video. Hopefully you saw the instant reaction. Hopefully you liked the instant reaction. Well, I've got some bonus footage here for you as well from the Levi's Stadium Lounge where I was able to record the 49ers update today. So this is why we use AirDrop. We move stuff from the phone to the computer, and then we play it for you on the channel. Looking for our montage of clips from today. I think I found it. There we go. Good. All right. AirDrop is complete. Let's get this stuff up on the screen. And let's answer a couple questions, then I'll get to the highlights if you guys stick around. We're close to a subscriber milestone. You guys can probably figure out what it is if you do a little bit of research. So hit the subscribe button right now. And we've been exploding here over the past couple days. Those of you listening on the podcast, if you're not listening on a podcast, go subscribe to the podcast. But if you're listening on the podcast, get onto the YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button. As I speak right now, we are at 73,772. So we're going to be at 74,000 really damn quickly. As Chuck559 says, you could smash the like button too. I'm ready for some of your questions. Hufanga is looking good as he sits in the shade and watches practice. He was talking to Brandon Ayuk for a lot of practice today. So we saw Ayuk and Lynch watch practice together in the picture I showed you at the top. That was probably the top storyline of the day. But then after Ayuk was done talking with Lynch, there's a little sliver of shade because it's really sunny in the desert of Santa Clara, but there's a little sliver of shade during these midday practices right along the southern fence. And that's where Brandon Ayuk was able to, press himself up against the fence. So he was in the shade. That's where Talanoa Hufanga was camping out. So Talanoa and Brandon Ayuk watched Malik Mustafa put on another good practice together today in the shade. But Hufanga's on PUP, physically unable to perform. He's shooting to be back for week one, but he's got to be activated for practice but before then if he wants to maintain that goal. So we'll see when Hufanga is back at training camp. This seems to have been the plan for quite some time for Talanoa. How does Logan Thomas's mustache look? I don't know, Mike. How does it look? I sent you the video. Can you send it back to me so I could put it up on the screen? Otherwise, I got to dig through my phone and get that video. Speaking of videos, why don't we play, while we wait for Mike to go dig that up, why don't we play today's practice video? Because it was fun times out at 49ers practice. Just have to find where it is. Here it is. Perfect. Let's do it. So there's Purdy. I talk about Brock being built even sturdier this year than he has been in the past. Quadzilla, baby Bosa legs. Everything's been crisp for Brock Purdy. He's been crisp. He's been in command. Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey will greet each other here before the start of 49ers practice. Today was McCaffrey's first day in team drills. They were taking it easy on day one, just part of his ramp-up plan. Now you're going to have a look through the receiver line for the 49ers. Juwan Jennings, obviously no Ricky Pearsall. Pearsall was sprinting at about 80% on the side field. He should be back next week. 18 is Chris Conley. Trent Taylor, 19. Quick Trent Taylor look. He made the nicest catch of practice today. Nice diving catch. And zero is Malik Turner, who just joined the team. Takes the roster spot that Trent Williams is currently not occupying. So this is crazy. I think a lot of people don't know this, and I'm going to pause this. See Daniel Bullocks, that's the 49ers DB coach. Left foot, it's got the boot. Daniel Bullocks actually tore his ACL. He tore his Achilles in the Super Bowl. I am not kidding you. The 49ers DB coach tore his Achilles on the sideline in the Super Bowl. Talk about adding injury to insult. So two 49ers tore their Achilles on the sideline, not even playing football. Dre Greenlaw and their DB coach, Daniel Bullocks. So all the best to him as he works on his recovery. He's there with Diamante Lenore and Charvarius Ward. DB, they call him, Daniel Bullocks. Looks like he's walking fine in that boot, but it just goes to show you the cost of that Super Bowl loss. That was a dark day for the 49ers. Where would you rate Diamante Lenore and Charvarius Ward, by the way, in terms of NFL cornerback tandems? Let me know in the comments section. I think Spencer Burford's coming to camp looking good, in good shape. Now, we won't know if he's playing well until the pads come on, but just a look at the physique for Spencer Burford, I think, is on point. I think he's had a productive offseason in that regard. So guess who this is? Looking like an action hero with this new padding. It's one of the coaching fellows, and it's a former 49ers player. I've paused it again. Nearest us, that is Ronald Blair. Remember Ronnie Blair, Robert Saleh's favorite player? Left the 49ers to play for the Jets. He's since retired as a player, but he's now a coaching fellow for the 49ers. Ronald Blair, back out on the field. Now, this is new, the armor that these coaches are wearing. I mean, he looks like a Power Ranger. It's cool, but the armor that he's wearing it has numbers on it, and that's for technique, for the defensive linemen to be able to aim at different parts of the blocker. 49ers have introduced a lot of new training techniques over the course of this offseason. The linebackers are recovering volleyballs to help with their fumble recovery skills. There's Jarrett Kingston. This is the rookie hype machine, the first of the year. And here you have a look at Drake Nugent, the undrafted center out of Michigan. 66, Drake Nugent. You know, size doesn't look to be too much of an issue here. It looks like Nugent's got plenty of strength, and it looks like there's a lot of muscle on that frame. I think height was a little bit of a question mark. That's why he went undrafted. But a lot of folks are excited about Drake Nugent because anytime you could get a center that was an first team all Big Ten guy on a national championship 15-0 Michigan team, anytime you can get a player with that kind of resume in undrafted free agency, I think that you have an upside signing on your hands. And Drake Nugent's been with the third team to start camp, but we're not really expecting centers that are fresh out of college to make a huge impact in this 49ers offensive system. That's one thing, you know. There are systems in the NFL where the quarterback handles all the protections. And then there's the Shanahan system where the quarterback can freelance, but the center formerly handles the protections at the line of scrimmage. So that's why Shanahan loved Alex Mack. That's why this is a veteran-dominated position with the 49ers. But we talk about the cornerback position, for example, where Darrell Luter Jr. is working in the shadows to potentially grab a starting spot next year. I think the same could be said about center. It's a longer burn, a longer development at that center position. So maybe somebody like Drake Nugent, maybe somebody like Bryson Mays, maybe even Ben Bartsch, who's been around the league a little bit longer, maybe those guys eventually graduate after a year working behind the scenes to being able to compete for the starting center job in 2025. All right, Mike sent me the Logan Thomas look. So I'm going to save this, and we're going to put it up on the screen. So remember, Logan Thomas is sporting a mustache now. And George Kittle said that mustache made Logan Thomas look like a tall Luigi. So let's take a look. Tall Luigi or no? I was only able to get this video through the helmet. Is that a good angle? Yeah, I think he looks like a tall Luigi. That's what George Kittle said. So we're just analyzing what Kittle said. That's one of the mustaches that the 49ers have in that tight end room. We have a question. If my life was dependent on the correct answer, will Brandon Ayuk be back? Yes or no? Well, if my life was dependent on the question, then I'd probably be in a bad situation because it would not be good to have your life depend on such a trivial question. But to entertain and humor all of you, my life was dependent on it. Brandon Ayuk will be back. Thankfully, it's not dependent on it. The Midwestern 49ers fan base has to go to bed for work tomorrow. Well, that's good. But I'm in right now in the callus building phase. I'm trying to showcase my endurance early in the season. And I'm trying to build my endurance for when I'll really need it later in the season. So I'm going to keep on going live. You could watch on your phone too. If you're already laying, maybe you already are laying in bed. I think a lot of people consume YouTube watching on their phone, laying in bed. So I'm going to keep on going. This is like a marathon for me. It's already past 9 o'clock here on the West Coast. I think if you're in the Midwest, if you're in Iowa, are you in Iowa? Then it's what time? I think it's 11. Yeah. My wife is already asleep in Nashville. Talked to her right before we went on air here. And I said, you know, I'm about to go over an hour. We'll try to make this a nice mega show because there's still a lot of people watching. Some of you might be in Hawaii. Raise your hands if you're from Hawaii or from Alaska, if you're from a time zone behind the Pacific time zone. I owe it to you to keep on talking about the 49ers and asking questions. Yes, the Boys Deli hat's been all over. Now, if you're interested in, this is the year of the hat. I'm trying to support a lot of businesses with the hat. I've got a few more in the pipeline. Local businesses in the Bay Area are preferred. If you've got a hat that, especially this kind of style, this kind of like trucker mesh style, I really like that. I think it's good for the show. If you have anything that I can wear, you can go ahead and get in touch with me. I think my email's on my Twitter. So you can go find my email there and we'll make it happen here in the year of the hat. So the Boys Deli hat's made it all around. We're going to wear the Lombardi Wines hat coming up this week. I have the Wimbledon hat that I've been wearing. It's not exactly a small business, but I went to Wimbledon with Margot a couple weeks ago over in London, and it was a lot of fun. So we got a hat, and I've been wearing it. But here in the year of the hat, we're going to continue trying to be creative. Wesley asks, why are the 49ers safeties so stocky? Hufanga doesn't seem like a free safety. We have so many near the line of scrimmage safeties. Well, I started the show talking a lot about Malik Mustafa, who obviously is built like a mini linebacker. He's exceptionally built. It's not like Talanoa Hufanga is built like Malik Mustafa. But, you know, this is why the 49ers' poor run defense last year, I think, was so disappointing. You have a team that's built to stop the run first because they do have a little bit more size and they do have a little bit more capability to theoretically crash down from that safety level to stop the run. So I think that that's part of the 49ers' defensive philosophy, but they're looking for guys who can do both, right? They're looking for guys who can handle the rough and tumble game near the box, but also deliver with range on the back end. That's why Talanoa Hufanga was an all-pro. He might not be the fastest guy, but the anticipation that he showed in 2022 led to what? 5-6 interceptions. It was a great year for him. And they're hoping for something similar out of Malik Mustafa, although he's built even more like a bowling ball that can deliver near the line of scrimmage. There we go. We got some Hawaii fans chiming in. I love that. Here's one of them. Good stuff. Do I think that Banks is going to lose his job to the rookie? No, I don't think so. I think that the rookie, Dominic Pooney, he's competing for that right guard spot first and foremost. That's where Spencer Burford is getting the first team reps right now. I think Aaron Banks, he's on a contract year, but I think that he's relatively safe at that left guard position. More questions are welcome. Mike thinks this might be Banks' last year with the 49ers. Given what guards are going for on the open market and Banks is going to be scheduled for unrestricted free agency after this season, I tend to agree. I mean, you've seen insane, insane prices. Robert Hunt, 20 plus million per year. That was a guard that just signed the other day, right? It's another big money deal. I'm telling you, there's a shortage of quality offensive linemen out there to where guys who aren't as good are still commanding big time money. The Rams had to pay for it. They brought in Jonah Jackson and Kevin Dotson, who are two okay guards. I don't think they're anything great, and they're still paying over $15 million per year. So the 49ers have a different philosophy. They like to draft their guards and play them on rookie contracts. I don't think they like to pay for guards. I don't think they see the value there, especially if they're having to pay for all these skill position players. And with that philosophy, they're relying on somebody like Dominic Pooney or Spencer Burford. One of those two has to deliver. And then obviously they need good replacement level, at least replacement level play from Aaron Banks this year. Mike predicts that Dominic Pooney will start at left guard next year in 2025. It's crazy that we're already on 2025 next year. Harry says that it'll be in Lambeau. We're going to figure out where we're going to do some fan meetups this year. We're definitely going to do a fan meetup in Nashville before the first preseason game. My wife is organizing it. So you're going to get to meet her if you come out to that. You get to meet a few of my friends out there in Nashville. I'm sure they'll be there. It's going to be a bar over near Broadway. That's before the 49ers play the Titans. This is how quickly stuff is coming up on us now. It's July 25th, and the first preseason game is August 10th. Just like 2 weeks away. It's crazy. It's not going to be, I mean, on Saturday, it's going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be 14 days. So it's about 16 days away from that first preseason game. Brandon Staley was on the field. He's got no other place to be. There's no press box at practice. Brad from the SF Niners put up a really good video of Brandon Staley that I'm going to play for you right now. Go check out Brad's channel, the SF Niners. He does a great job. I should say hi to him. I think he's at... Brad, if you're at training camp, come down and say hi tomorrow. He has to be at training camp, right? Because he's posting these good videos. This is from Brad. That's Brandon Staley working with the 49ers DBs. That's Isaac Yiadom. That's D'Amato Lenore, Darrell Luter Jr., talking about him. He had the interception today. Yiadom is the 49ers' first-team outside cornerback when they're playing nickel. Lenore's been moving inside. So Brandon Staley, some hands-on work with the 49ers' DBs. That was right before practice started during the walkthrough session of practice. So good video there from Brad. This is a good question from David. Could Kingston, Jarrett Kingston, the 49ers sixth-round pick, be a right tackle? Funny enough, the 49ers, their third-team offensive line, Kingston has been playing right tackle. Dominic Pooney, who actually played a ton of tackle more than Kingston in college, has been playing right guard on that third team. So, yes, Kingston is extremely athletic. He's not as big as you would expect the tackle to be. So that's why I think a lot of the projections have had him in there at the guard position. But he's literally been playing tackle for the third team over the course of this training camp. So I think it's a good question, and I think it's definitely a possibility. Feliciano at center. I would think that Feliciano would be at center only if Jake Brendel gets hurt. I think Brendel's their top option at center. Feliciano might be the top backup, although we've seen Ben Bartsch taking a lot of second team reps at that center position. And Bartsch, you know, that's a player whose stock has been rising. He dislocated his knee for Jacksonville 2 years ago. So when the 49ers picked Ben Bartsch up off of Jacksonville's practice squad, he still wasn't back up to full strength. I think he's a lot closer to full strength now. So look out for him to be one of the 49ers' top backups along the interior line. I Yeah, Feliciano might be the sixth offensive lineman, but he can't play tackle. I think he might have played tackle occasionally at some point earlier in his career, maybe on the right side. But Feliciano is an interior lineman through and through. So you're going to have to figure out that swing tackle spot. You're just going to have to figure out tackle in general with Trent Williams away right now. I mean, that's an integral piece of this team, and that's a spot that obviously hasn't looked as good without Big Trent there at left tackle over the first two practices. You're hearing that the Saints will not have open practices with the 49ers in Irvine. I don't know, because I'll be there, even if it's not open, obviously, since I'll be covering the practices. But here's something I'll let you know. But if you're not allowed in, if they're not open, then I promise to give you very, very good coverage of the 49ers Saints open practices down at UC Irvine. Who's taking the majority of Greenlaw snaps? That would be Devondre Campbell, wearing number 59. He now wears 59. Curtis Robinson has changed to number 36. Curtis Robinson's been getting some run as the 49ers third linebacker, by the way, in some of these base packages for the first team. Not sure if they're just rotating guys through or what right now, but that's how they've set it up. You'd like to see Jalen Moore unseat Trent Williams at left tackle this season. Are you a masochist or something? Why would you want to see that? Trent Williams, one of the greatest tackles of all time, still playing at a very high level. The only way that he would unseat Trent Williams is if Trent got hurt or if he retired or something. I don't think that if you're a 49ers fan and you got a 49ers logo in your avatar there, I don't think that's something you want to see, Harry. That comment came out of left field. Those of you listening on the podcast, sorry, I'm just reading some comments here. I did not say that. I was just reading a comment. I don't think that anybody wants to see Jalen Moore unseat Trent Williams at left tackle. As Rich says, Trent will be getting his gold jacket. Yeah, he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no question about that. Renardo Green has been in both the slot and outside this week. They've been working him at both spots. And they started him in the slot to begin the offseason program back in the spring after the draft, but they thought he was handling that well, and they started moving him outside. I think he's the next Diamador Lenore for this football team, somebody who's able to play outside and inside at that cornerback position. Do I think that Trent is using the leverage of retirement? He should be. I mean, he's 36 years old. He's got so much good football under his belt. He could be a Hall of Famer if he retired on the first ballot. If you're not happy with the compensation that you have, you want more guaranteed money and the 49ers aren't budging, it's a nuclear option. But you could say, yeah, okay, fine, I'll retire. And then the 49ers will say, no, wait, come back. We'll give you your guaranteed money. That is Trent Williams' ultimate leverage. I think that's obvious in this situation. So I don't know if he is using it. Maybe these negotiations are going more smoothly and more amicably than it seems, due to the holdout. And if that's the case, then if they are going more smoothly and there's faith from both sides that an acceptable deal will be reached, he doesn't have to threaten retirement. But at the very least, Trent Williams has that threat in his back pocket. Does Debo run the ball more this season? Asks JT. Only if running backs get hurt. I think that the running level that we saw from Debo over the past two seasons is more like what you can expect. 2021 was because they were just completely depleted in the backfield. The 49ers are very, very dependent on Trent Williams right now. That's the simple truth of the matter. I mean, you know, this is a situation where this offensive line struggled last year at every single spot except left tackle. And Brock Purdy was still able to put up an MVP finalist campaign, which is a testament to how good Brock Purdy is, and probably a testament to how good Trent Williams is too. He can seal a lot of issues on that line. But the games where they missed Trent Williams coming off of the Cleveland game, so that was Minnesota and it was the Cincinnati Bengals, the games that they didn't have Trent Williams, they were losses, and they were ugly losses, in large part because Big Trent, big number 71, wasn't there on the left side. Roy thinks that Trent and BA will get signed soon because McCaffrey got extended. I would predict the same thing. Because the 49ers can win-win both of these deals if they find the right numbers. And that's the key. You got, they have a take it or leave it offer out to Brandon Ayuk. He's got to come to their number. He's already under contract. That's great. So is Trent Williams, but Williams got more leverage than Ayuk. Williams is indispensable. Ayuk isn't. It's just the harsh reality here. So either way, the 49ers can find a way to lower cap hits for both of these guys, Ayuk and Williams, while giving them new deals. So the path to win-win is there. It's just got, you just have to find the dollars and cents that make sense in this scenario for both of these scenarios. Yeah, you're asking about the Fantasy Football League. I'm honored that you asked me to join it, but I don't play fantasy football. I'm already so footballed out as it is, and I like real football. I like talking about these 11 guys against those 11 guys. I don't like watching a game and then having one guy on my team and the other guy on my team is not really on my team. You know, like, it creates all these weird rooting interests that I just can't deal with. So I appreciate the offer, but I am going to be watching real football and covering real football for you this season. Oh no, the mic fell again. That must mean that we're near the end of the show, but don't go anywhere yet because we'll have a nice little grand finale. I think I need to get a new mic stand. Yesterday it fell. Today it's loose. Trying to tighten it back up. I'm going to have to hold it for the rest of this show. Yeah. We're going to get a new mic stand. We got to make an investment. Otherwise, this thing is just going to cave in on me. Shouldn't Lynch have gotten these deals done sooner? Deals are not a unilateral thing. Trent Williams needs a sign on the dotted line for his deal to be done. Brandon Ayuk needs a sign on the dotted line for his deal to be done. You can't just press a button and have the deal finished. You know, I think there's been this mistaken idea because of the video game culture, because of everybody building their franchises on Madden, that you just get a deal done unilaterally, and you can't. I mean, Nick Bosa didn't even want to negotiate with the 49ers a year early. He wouldn't come to the table until last offseason, or his Brian Arolt, his agent, wouldn't come to the table until last offseason. So sometimes a player doesn't want to sign earlier. In the case of Brandon Ayuk, he was incentivized to hold on to a higher demand until after Justin Jefferson signed his contract. Trent Williams probably didn't like where the number was earlier too, and he wanted to put the 49ers' feet to the fire, and he thought that he might be able to get a little bit more money if he waited until deadline pressure at the start of training camp because the team would start to feel the heat then. So it's not about, oh, the 49ers should have gotten this done sooner. Both parties need to get this done sooner if they want it done sooner. But the business dynamics of these situations often disincentivize players from signing on the dotted line sooner. And that's just the reality of the situation. So the 49ers have to count on deadline pressure, which, and we're reaching the forest of deadline pressure right now. 49ers have to count on it to help them pass through the finish line. Their track record of signing these guys is really good. Bosa, Warner, Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Trent Williams the first time. They gave him a big contract. I mean, Kyle Juszczyk. 49ers are stocked with players. And that's part of the problem, and it's a good problem to have. Yes, Nick Bosa and Trent Williams have true leverage because they are irreplaceable players to a team with Super Bowl aspirations. Brandon Ayuk, I mean, he really helps. He's a really damn good player. You can't take anything away from Brandon Ayuk, but just by the nature of the position that he plays and the fact that the 49ers have a lot of talent at that position and at the skill position spots next to Brandon Ayuk, just by virtue of that, he's not as irreplaceable as Trent Williams and Nick Bosa to this football team. We'll feature more food, too, from San Francisco. I'm just getting settled in the training camp. You know, why don't we feature some food right now? I went to Pacquan tonight. Who knows Pacquan? some good Indian food in San Francisco. It's on 16th and Guerrero, and they have some of the best garlic naan that you'll ever have. We're transferring it to the computer right now. Ever since I got this new camera, my phone was free. My phone used to be my camera, and I wasn't able to do this. It's made life a lot better for producing some of this content. Oh, I still have one more thing to show you guys after this, too. So this is Pakwan. That's the garlic naan. That's the chicken tikka masala. That's the rice. It was a really nice dinner. 16th and Guerrero in San Francisco. Really, really good food today. And now I can show you the behind the scenes of the lounge at Levi Stadium where I shot the video this afternoon. Joe Staley leading the team out. Jerry Rice. The 49ers of the 80s. Patrick Willis. Ronnie Lott. Looks like another picture of the 49ers of the 80s or the 90s. Can't tell who that is. Too much glare. We're going to head back up to the 49ers 1994 photo. Is that the Super Bowl? It's a big game that year. Jerry Rice, captain, leading the team out. And, of course, Joe Montana. Is that after defeat or is that before a game or is that at halftime? He looks exhausted. Some pretty cool pictures for the 49ers up on the wall. All right, any more good ones? I appreciate you, Sean. Thank you. JT likes the chicken tikka masala. Yes, it was good. It was a good dinner. It fueled me up to do this show. Looks like I'm handling these marathons well early in the season, just trying to pour content out for you guys. I mean, we went through a lot of players that were impressing and some that weren't necessarily impressing over the first couple of days. KJ Wright is out there coaching the linebackers. I'll get some video of KJ for you tomorrow. And he's using those volleyballs to help the linebackers recover fumbles. It's like a fumble recovery drill for the 49ers. KJ, the former Seattle Seahawk. Somebody asking about Danny Gray. Danny Gray, I think he's been more featured than he has been in the past. We'll have to see how that progresses in camp, especially once Ayuk and Pearsall are back. See if Gray is still in the mix. All right, it's been fun. It's time for me to tap out of this one. Everybody, thank you for watching. That's the deepest camp intel that we've done so far this year. Hit that subscribe button. We're about to hit a huge milestone. So if you haven't subscribed, do so right now. Hit the subscribe button and go check out the podcast, the Lombardi Lounge, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. We'll talk to everybody very soon.